So we're reading from Bhajan Rahasyam. We're discussing the fourth verse of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Shikshastakam. Adanana Janana Sundaram Kavitam Va Jagadishakame Mama Janmani Janmanishvare Bhavatad Bhaktira Hoitakitai. And yesterday, over the last couple of days, we discussed Nadanana Janam and Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. They're explaining that with these two words, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does a massive execution or elimination of the three of the Chatura Purusharthas. The Dharma, Artha, and Kama are eliminated by these two words, Nadanam, Najanam. And then all that's left is liberation or mukti, and that's eliminated by Kavitam, which we mentioned before discussing it. So now we can discuss Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim. So Sundari, the word Sundara, we say Sham Sundara, Gora Sundara, means beautiful. Sundara. Very beautiful. In other words, another meaning that's given here is that it represents the most formidable sense desire. What is the formidable means very difficult to overcome or to conquer, I believe. So the most formidable sense desire is the desire for companionship. So the word sundarim means this. This is a very interesting definition. Because there's nothing more beautiful than a friend. Because Sanskrit has many meanings. The words have many meanings. So we say, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim. So Sundara means beautiful. And Sundari, we have this lady's name is Ati Sundari Devi Dasi. So Sundari means, Ati means excessively or extremely, and Sundari means beautiful. It's one of the names of Radharani. She's Mahaparama, excessively beautiful. There's no end to the beauty of Radharani because it you can't define it, because when you start to define it, she's already changed. You're observing her beauty and say, yes, you're looking at Radharani, then you want to write down on a piece of paper how beautiful she is. And as you're writing, you look up again just to confirm what you're writing, like a painter may look at an object, then paint it, then look, then paint. So you're writing something about the beauty of Radharani, then you look up to confirm your observation. And you say, wait a minute, she looks different. Because at every moment her beauty is increasing and enhancing. So this definition is that the Sundaram means beautiful, but this word also represents the desire for companionship. And it's a very interesting definition. Because often when you meet people in a spiritual society, if they are not finding fulfillment in the revelation of the relationship with Bhagavan or with Krishna, if they're personalists like ourselves, if that fulfillment is not coming and they're not experiencing the companionship or friendship of God or Krishna, then they may seek elsewhere. In our counseling or preaching of devotees throughout the years, especially brahmacharis, and they wish to get married, we say, why do you want to get married? What is your idea? And he says, Maharaj, I've been a brahmachari for 10 years, or 15, or whatever. Or in the case of one our god brother was living in Vrindavan for so many years, and he got married at the age of 45. He's a brahmachari for 24 years or something like that. I said, wow, I mean, all these years in Vrindavan, all these parikramas, and all these, all these, and it ends up with this. I mean, it doesn't seem to add up. What gives here? And the reply usually is that I want companionship. I need friendship. I said, well, what about Gopal? Gopal is supposed to be our pal. Pal means, in English, P-A-L means pal. Pal means friend. So Gopal, as some people say, Gopal, is supposed to be everyone's friend, because go means the senses, and everyone has senses. So he's a friend of everyone who has senses. So So what about this friend? He's lovable, he's cuttable, he's funny, he's clever, he's naughty, he's mischievous, unpredictable, ever changing and ever fresh. He's romantic, sweet, kind, and generous. But such a friend, you can't find such a friend to be endearing or attractive. So this word is indicating this, that this has to be eliminated also. That the desire for companionship above and beyond Gopal. Generally we say nadana najana na sundaram. Sundaram means we have to give up the desire for beautiful ladies or beautiful men. But earlier the acharyas say all those people are included in jana. When we say jana, it means people, living entities. So people includes men and women. Sometimes jana is translated as followers. So men follow women. That's how they spend their whole lives, following women. And women follow men. That's how they spend life after life. Nadana najana nasundaram. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that sundaram refers also to kam, or the company for beautiful people or beautiful ladies. Nadana najana nasundaram. I very much like this definition, that it represents the most formidable sense desire, the desire for companionship. Because oftentimes people can give up many, many things, but they can't give up that desire, companionship. They feel they may be sense controlled, and they may be even practically have nothing in this world, but they want to have some company, or they want to have some friendship. They feel lonely. Sometimes people, I ask sannyasis, they say, "Don't you feel lonely?" Well, they say, "Where's your mother? Where's your father? Were you married? Or where's your wife? Do you know where your wife is now?" 30 years later, after your sannyas. They ask, Indians will especially ask, "Oh, you're a sannyas? You were married?" "Yes." Where's your wife? It's like, what the hell do I know? But they're so much absorbed in all of that that they can't think there's any world beyond that. And then they say, "Listen, do you mind if I ask you a personal question? Don't you feel lonely?" You say, "Yes, I do feel lonely. I'm really missing Radha and Krishna. I feel alone without them." And I say, no, besides that, I mean, you know, like for a friend, you know. So, Bhoktaram yaka tapasam sarva loka maheshram suridam sarva bhutanam. What is that? How's it going? Yatma mam shantam richati. That Krishna, he is a friend of everyone. He is a surit. He is a heart-to-heart friend. So Lord Chaitanya says, eliminate it. This will stand. This friendship will block your friendship for Krishna. You won't be able to love Krishna causelessly, with undivided attention. If your love is split, then you can't focus your love completely on Krishna. Nadana najana nasundaram kavitam. Kavitam, everyone knows the word. Krishna's Kaviraj, Govinda Kaviraj. There are many Kavirajas. Even in Gaudiya Sampradaya, there's the Ashta Kavirajas that are famous. Krishna's Kaviraj, and Govinda Kaviraj. Can't remember the other ones. There's eight of them that are famous. So Kavi means poetry. So the literal meaning, these words actually go together, which is sometimes misunderstood. They can be translated differently. Sometimes people take sundaram to mean beautiful women, followers and beautiful women. But generally, the commentators, they say, nadana najana nasundaram kavitam. That sundaram kavitam, these two words are taken as one. Sundaram, beautiful, and kavitam, poetry. So this means beautiful poetry adorned with literary embellishments. That means alankar. So this word sundari kavita, Bhaktivinoda says, it means ordinary material knowledge. Because ordinary material knowledge, which is Vedic knowledge, is full of poetic language, attractive descriptions of material objectives or goals, swarga mukti, when they just, as I mentioned in the earlier class, when the Vedas describe, if you describe something, especially in modern advertising, whenever they describe something, they spend months and months picking out exactly the right words. The right words that rhyme or that are very catchy tunes or catchy words. Because not only do they describe an object they want you to buy, but they use very attractive language to fully attract you to that object. Attract your sense of music, your sense of beauty or meaning. So in the same way, Vyasa wrote the Vedas in such an attractive and beautiful way. So when you hear about Swarga, not only is the object or the goal that they're explaining attractive, oh, it's an attractive place, but it's described in an attractive way with attractive language, full of alankara. So this is what is meant here. It says, ordinary material knowledge, knowledge which is describing anything but pure love of Krishna, is basically material knowledge. It can also be thought of as related to mundane poetry as opposed to real knowledge, which firmly situates one's intelligence at the lotus feet of Krishna. So most of the Vedic knowledge is flowery. It's beautifully written and an eloquent style with all kinds of what they use these terms, ornamentation and alankar, and it's very attractive to read. The Vedas are poetry. They're fun to read. They're songs. You can sing them. And so many, if you read throughout the Vedas, there's so many Gitas, Rudra Gita, and this Gita, and that Gita, and they're very attractive. So you read them, and you get inspired because it kindles the fire, it kindles the fire of our own material desires, and then we pursue those Vedic teachings and follow the path of Karmakanda or Gyanakanda and get material fruits or go to the heavenly planets. And this Sundara Kavitam says, take all of these Vedic literatures, all of these writings, all these beautiful writings, so elaborately presented, but they aren't Bhakti Siddhanta, and take them and put them to the side. Eliminate them. Don't read them. Don't study them. Don't be distracted by them or allured by them. Nadanam najanam nasundaram kavitam. Because oftentimes there's different types of sense enjoyment, different types of pleasure. We can get pleasure from the gross senses or even the subtle sense of the mind. Fine music or beautifully recited poetry can satisfy one, can satisfy the mind. The sound, the vibration, the rhyme, the meter, the music. In Sanskrit, there's chanda and rag and melody, all these things. So even just to sit back and enjoy reading the Vedas, enjoy the stories. Lord Chaitanya said, don't waste your time. This is also a waste of time. This is anti-devotional. This is, in other words, he's really cutting. He's trimming the excess off of our pursuit of bhakti in this verse. Because in a previous verse he said, try to gain these four qualities and always chant the Lord's name. These four qualities will help you become steady in chanting. Okay, that's easy. We can try for that. And now we've become somewhat steady in chanting the Lord's name. Some humility has come, some tolerance, some respect and pridelessness. And now the going gets tough. It starts cutting off everything. Because a lot of you see that in a devotional line, devotees many times they get lost in these different areas. Useless pursuits, studying different aspects of the Vedas, and losing valuable time for the cultivation of Shuddha Bhakti. They get lost and attracted only for enjoyment, not for any practical application or for preaching purposes or others. So this word kavitam represents moksha, which I've already mentioned. So we have nadanam, najanam, nasundaram, kavitam. So there we have dharma, art, kam, moksha. Everything is being eliminated. In four words, Lord Chaitanya eliminates everything. So liberation apparently has a high value, but really it's like poetry. It is only flowery words. Impersonal liberation is imaginary, because the ultimate result of such liberation is that one's existence vanishes. It doesn't really vanish, it's covered. The individuality is existing, but it's covered. That's what one wants. One wants liberation, he wants to cover. In essence, Lord Chaitanya is praying like this: O my Lord, I reject not only bhukti, material enjoyment, in the form of dharma, art, and kama, but mukti as well. I don't desire liberation from the cycle of birth and death, and I don't want to serve you in order to attain the four Vedic goals. In other words, I don't have anything in mind. It's not that I want something from my service for myself. I don't want to attain Dharma, art, or the fruits of Dharma, or any one of these individually, these are also goals. The goal of Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha. I want to serve you only to give you pleasure. And there's some more description of this I have also written here. And this is very interesting. Because we said Kavitam Sundaram means flowery words or beautiful words, beautiful poetry. So it can also mean, in a very practical way, no desire to hear flowery words in praise of yourself from others. It's a very interesting application, because so far we've heard that Sundaram Kavitam refers to liberation or moksha, which is indicated by the flowery, poetic, and beautifully written words of the Vedas. But now we're bringing it closer to home, just for our own day-to-day pleasure, that we get pleasure. This is against pure bhakti, to want to hear self-praise. Devotees with ruchi, they have no desire to attain material knowledge or the arts. All this falls within the realm of karma. The word kavitam refers either to material knowledge or knowledge that leads to liberation from material existence. These four goals of human life, these are necessities or ideals, include the entire range of human activities, as well as transcendence of human experience. And when one attains ruchi for nam, he has no desire for any of them. So this is the great gift. We say that bhakti is shubhada and klesha agni. It creates all good fortune. Just by chanting the holy name, just see how much one can get. It's inconceivable how much good fortune. That if one attains ruchi for nam, everything, any taste for anything else gets automatically lost without any separate endeavor. Bhaktivinoda Thakura also explains about this Sundaram Kavitam in his Bhajan Rahasyam, in the fourth bhajan. In verse 18, and he's quoting from 6th Canto Bhagavatam, Vritrasura Upakya, the prayers of Vritrasura, who appeared somewhat as if he was in the form of a demon, but it was due to a curse that in his previous life he was Chitraketu, yeah, Chitraketu was Yamraj's servant. Chitraketu, he was cursed by Parvati because he was laughing at her when she was sitting on Mahadevi's lap. So he became a demon, at least externally. He had to suffer and be killed by Indra. But he was exhibiting all the qualities of pure devotion in his prayers because he's actually a devotee of the Lord. And even the fact that he was rewarded by the Lord for his devotion in his previous life as Chitraketu, and that reward, Krishna gave him a Learjet, gave him a fancy airplane to fly around the universe and have a good time. Like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it says that sometimes the devotees may have some material desires, and the Lord lets them fly around and travel to different higher planets and fulfill those desires, and when they're fulfilled, then he goes to the spiritual world. So here, Chitraketu became this demon, and this particular prayer, oftentimes the Gaudiya Acharyas, they comment on these prayers because they say that the prayers in 6th canto of Vritrasura indicate Shuddha Bhakti, pure Bhakti. And some Acharyas go so far to say that the seed of Gopi Bhav or the scent of Gopi Bhav and the pure love of the Gopis of Vrindavan is also contained in particular prayers of Vritrasura in chapter 11 of the 6th canto, which is a long way from the 10th canto. And this title of this verse that Bhaktivinoda gives is The Insignificance of High Position. because that's what the Sundaram Kavitam are all about. The beautiful words of the Vedas, they induce us or attract us or allure us to pursue life on higher planets or to pursue more, a higher class of sense enjoyment by going to the higher planets or even pursuing some liberation in Vaikuntha, which falls short, falls short of pure bhakti. Even that itself is a type of desire to live on the same planet, Salokya Mukti, or have the same opulence. And the Lord awards that, but then you're just there, living there, but there's no real service. So in this verse, Vrichasura, what Bhaktivinoda gives the introduction, he says, residence in high planets, heavenly planets, Brahmaloka, sovereignty over the earth or lower planetary systems, the perfections of yoga and the 18 mystic perfections are all insignificant from the viewpoint of a devotee. So this is Sundaram Kavitam. The Vedas are full of this. It's almost like they're hanging out all these things. You read the Vedas, oh, you want mystic powers? Do you know that you can fly in the sky? You can become lighter than lightest, Lagima City, or smaller than the smallest. And so they try to attract people with interesting sale offer, you know, half price sales. If you just chant this mantra or do this Purush Charan Brata, then you can get Vag City and you can control people and get a big following and get a big ashram in Himalayas and have so much fame. And so then they take up these descriptions of the Vedas and they perform these intense austerities and they get rewarded. So Vrichasura is saying, Nanaka Prishtam na cha parameshtyam na sarva bhomam na rasadipatyam na yoga siddhi rapunar bhavambha samanjasatva virahaya kankshe. O source of all good fortune, I have no desire to have a position of great sovereignty like that of Dhruva or Brahma, or rulership over the earth, nor do I desire anima or any other mystic perfections. I do not even want liberation, if attaining it means I would have to give you up. So this is almost sounds like the prayer that we're studying, Nandanam Najanam Nasindaram. That's why when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was meditating on Shikshastakam, this prayer, he was thinking, where can I get some more inspiration for this prayer? Because the prayer is just said there. It's Lord Chaitanya is saying it. So of course we can pray to Lord Chaitanya that we can get free from all these unnecessary interests. But also we can take strength from Vrichasura, the demon, so-called demon. He's actually a great devotee of the Lord. And there are many, many personalities in the Bhagavatam, but Vrichasura holds a very, very special position, especially for sadhakas of pure bhakti, because he's indicating pure bhakti in his prayers. So the purport is there, the long purport. Yeah, sometimes he includes Vishnu's Chakravarti's commentary from the Bhagavatam in this verse. And there's part of it's here. Directly perceiving Bhagavan, Vrichasura expressed the moods of his heart. O source of all good... So here's this demon whom Indra is attacking and cutting off with a thunderbolt which was produced from the bones of Didichi Muni. This is quite a special thunderbolt, because his own thunderbolt broke. It wasn't good enough. So now he's praying to the Lord. So demons don't usually pray to the Lord. He's saying, oh, source of all good fortune. And he's saying, look, I don't want anything. He's not neti neti. I don't want position Dhruvaloka or Brahmaloka, the rulership of earth. He says, if I have to give you up, my life is leaving my body in the fire of separation from you. Oh, Prabhu, how can I ever attain the eternal service to your lotus feet? So actually, that's why the Acharyas say that the prayers of Vrichasura that very much sound like the gopis of Vrindavan. Devotees long to attain the eternal service of Bhagavan. So in the prayers of Ritrasura, there's a great sense of utkantita, of yearning or longing. And this is a very good feeling or sentiment for a devotee to acquire. And when one is suffering in one position, then longing and hankering to attain another position, the more one is suffering in his present position, the deeper his hankering and longing can be for another position. So when we realize the content of this verse from Shikshastakam, how much we're suffering or being impaled on the swords or the piercing swords of these various distractions from Krishna's service, such as Dhanana Janana Sundaram Kavitam, then the degree to which we realize that these things are with us and must be eliminated, then the more we can reach out to the Lord and hanker. Because we should feel that these are death producing. These are death producing attachments. Attachments to wealth and honor and dharma and artha and kama, desire for liberation or going back to Godhead. Like we say, we should want to go back to Godhead. So these are death producing. We're also being cut at the neck. These attachments are also cutting our neck. Just like Vrishasura is getting his neck cut by the thunderbolt of Indra. So in that position of having his head cut off, he feels desperate. But our problem is, we don't feel desperate. One of our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Sridhar Swami, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami, he would say that this material world is a plane of exploitation. And the Vaikuntha, or the realm of Narayan, is a plane of dedication. But the land of the gopis, the land of the Braja damsels, this is the plane of desperation. Desperation means you're mad, you're going mad. That the object of your love drives you mad. Like hot sugarcane juice. Too sweet to resist and too hot to drink. So Krishna makes the devotees... Yashoda becomes desperate for Krishna. He's 9 hours in the pasturing grounds, in the Goshta. And she's going crazy. Where is he? Where she goes, she must go 100 times up to the Chandra Shalika. She runs up and runs down. And she's not a teeny bopper. You know, she's not a young girl. She has gray hair. She gave birth to Krishna when she was 70. They had no children for 70 years. And she's running up. Now Krishna is 10, so she's 80. She's running up and down the stairs in this huge palace all the way up to the rooftop room to see, is there any dust of from the feet of the cows? Is there any sign of his peacock feather in the distance? Is there any sound of the buffalo horns blowing or his flutes blowing? Is the wind, is it, at least if I don't hear any of these things, or if I don't see any of these things, at least is the wind blowing from the southern direction and bringing the wonderful fragrance of my son's body wafting into my nostrils, so I can get the slightest indication that he's on the pathway back to Nandagaon? Up and down, up and down. She's desperate. And after a few times up and down the stairs becomes very, very slippery and very hard to walk on. Why? Because it's covered with milk and tears. You ever try to run up and down the stairs? It's covered with milk and tears. Just like we walk around Govardhan Hill, and sometimes these people they're dropping milk all over the footpath, road to bathe Giriraj, and it's all over the place and it's slippery. Just walking on a plane, straight plane, you can't avoid it sometimes. Of course, you don't want to step on it, but you can't avoid it. So this is the plane of desperation. So Vrishasura, he's teaching us, listen, devotees, listen, I'm a demon, but of course you're all devotees, but try to take some indication from me and become desperate like me. I'm desperate. Indra is cutting my throat. I'm leaving my body. I'm not afraid. I'm not disturbed. But I am disturbed by one thing. My hankering to serve my Lord. My hankering to be with my Lord. So these verses and prayers of Vrishasura are extremely anukul, favorable for pure bhakti in general. What to speak of the topic at hand. The understanding and illumination of this verse of Shikshastakam, Nadanam Najanam Nasundaram, Kaviram Bha Jagadish Kamiya. Vrishasura is our teacher in this regard. He will teach us, he will help us to attain Ruchi and Nam, Because if we can attain this quality that he's exhibiting, this great eagerness and yearning for Krishna, then that itself will force us to take shelter of the holy name. When we're hankering for Krishna's service, the only way we can attain Krishna is by taking more shelter of the holy name. And the more we chant, then the more the taste will come, sooner the taste will come. If I have to give, he says, my life is leaving my body in the fire of separation from you. O Prabhu, how can I ever attain eternal service to your lotus feet? Devotees long to attain the eternal service of Bhagavan. Only one who has factually realized the bliss of serving Krishna, Sevananda, knows the significance of this. Longing to attain the service of Bhagavan. So it's interesting. It says that devotees long to attain. Generally, we think that a devotee is someone who's serving Krishna, or at least thinks he's serving Krishna. But actually, Krishna can only be served in Siddhadeha. With bhavas. We have to have a siddhadeya full of bhav, sthayi bhav, and various expressions of anubhav and vyavachari bhav. Because Krishna is served not by senses or by objects or by bodies, he's served by bhavas. He relishes and receives bhavas. That's why Radharani is Mahabhav Sarupini. Her body is nothing but bhav. Her sarup is made of different bhavas. The most perfect form and expression of bhava. So this is what pleases Krishna, is the bhava, bhava grahi janardan. It's not, like we say in English, it's not what you do that counts, it's how you do it. So that goes all the way to Goloka. And matter of fact, in Goloka, it's how you do everything that counts. It's not, you don't have to do anything, but have the right bhava. By obtaining dharma, artha, and kam, the living entity does not stop its transmigration. Devotees relish the sweetness of service in newer and newer ways in the eternal land of the Lord. This is the unique characteristic of the bhakta and bhakti. Bhakti Devi disappears from the heart of one who desires liberation, and this is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 1, verse 92. Taramode mokshavancha kaitava pradan yaha hoite krishna bhakti hai antardan. The foremost process of cheating is a desire for liberation, for this causes the disappearance of Krishna bhakti. So liberation, as we mentioned, even the desire for salokya is also a cheating process, which we've been discussing over the last few days. Because Lord Chaitanya he's trying to refine our concept of spiritual life. That right here is Vrindavan, right here is Krishna and Radha, and pure service and pure bhakti is right here. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also explaining that. But generally, in the beginning, at least maybe for a long time, we harbor the idea that I have to go back to Godhead. And that itself, the desire to go back to Godhead, as I said, is desire for Saloki Mukti. We want to go to the spiritual world. And of course, in the beginning, this is good to get out, because now we desire to stay in the material world, and that's all we know, and that's all we want. So to have some idea that I should not want this world, but not want another world, that's a good start. But once we get started, then we should realize, well, actually, doesn't matter what world I'm in, but I should be in the world of service. That's all. Prema is really the goal. Because I don't believe that everyone, when they first come to Krishna consciousness, has the idea that the goal of this sadhana is prema. Generally, most devotees think the goal is liberation. The goal is, because everyone says, go back home, back to Godhead. Chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Then after some time, or if you have good association and read properly and clearly, then you understand that actually the goal is prema. And prema means service. Anukulyena Krishna anushilanam. But this, at first, this is not so obvious. Because everyone comes from various backgrounds, religious backgrounds mostly. And all those religious pursuits have some idea of heaven, or the world after this, or a higher attainment. And they don't really have the idea of prema seva, Bhagavan, Prem Seva of God, that I'm in this world and I will go to some other world. Even the Mormons or any type of group, they have, it's only the Gaudiyas that have the conception, God, it is here. It's here, right here. You don't have to go anywhere. Gopa Kumar was here in Vrindavan. He's living here 500 years ago, and he went all over the place. And he went to Vrindavan, and he said, wait a minute, it looks like Punchari and Aniyur, and even there's guys that, when Gopa Kumar went to Govardhan in the spiritual world, there were people there saying, Sheetal pain bomb. Sheetal pain bomb. Kamar dard, peit dard, sheer dard. 15 cc, 25 cc. Sheetal pain bomb. So he said, hey, really? This they have it up here too. Because Radharani gives Krishna some pain sometimes, you know. His head is hurting. He gets a headache. Didn't you never heard Krishna gets headaches? That's in Dwarka. Rukmini gives him a headache. Sometimes Radharani gives Krishna a headache, so he takes out some Sheetal pain. Well, of course, we're joking, but the point that Brihad Bhagavatamrita is making is that as above, so below. Microcosm and the macrocosm. That it's right here. It's just turn the switch from aprakrit to prakrit. Aprakat to prakrit. And that switch is, you move that switch when we change our consciousness. When we change our consciousness, that which is not manifest, aprakat, becomes prakat, manifest. And that means you're siddha. A siddha devotee, he actually enters the visual realm. He sees Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So this is unique. Only in Gaudiya Vaishnavism such a concept is there. Every other Vaishnav religion or Vaishnav idea of Dharma, you have to go somewhere else. You have to go to Vaikuntha. You have to go to Ayodhya. You have to go to some other loka. Goloka, the spiritual world. We say go home back to God. Really, what Prabhupada is actually saying is go to the heart. Go to the heart of the matter. Enter your heart and find Radha and Krishna. So our heart is Vrindavan, so the heart is pure bhakti. So Brichasura, we can get some inspiration to, and some help in our quest for Nam Ruchi by studying his prayers, and especially this prayer, 6.11.25. He is a Mahajan, a teacher of bhakti. Vritrasura Upakya. Chanaka Pandit says in Niti Shastra that we can take gold even from a filthy place. So certainly he's not a filthy place, but it seems like a very unlikely source or unlikely person to take valuable spiritual instructions from a demon. But in fact, there are sometimes 2-week discussions, 3-week discussions in various Gaudiya missions about the prayers of Vritrasura. Bhaktisanta Saraswati had very deep discussions about these prayers because they're so much important and necessary for the devotees to cultivate pure bhakti in the mood of Vrindavan, Braj Bhakti. So this demon is teaching Gopi Bhav. So Gopi Bhav is rising from the pages of Bhagavatam even as early as, of course, throughout, but quite blatantly Gopi Bhav is appearing in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. And you have to consider that Shukadeva Goswami, everything he's writing about in Bhagavatam is simply to elaborate and to clarify the meaning of Anya Vilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Namritam. So there's so many stories he could put in and so many chapters he could have, but he selected all those particular personalities and chapters which best illustrate and will best teach the devotees how to come to the how to develop or realize or practice Uttam Bhakti according to this verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The whole Bhagavatam, these 18,000 verses are commentaries on Anya Vilashita Shunyam. So each of these characters is illustrating different aspects. Oh, there's some covering here of karma, some covering of jnana. There's some other desire here. Oh, this is almost it. And like this. So we can take these characters, because we're studying also Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we study Bhagavatam, we can combine Bhagavatam with Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the same thing. It's a commentary. It's also a commentary in this verse, Anyavilashita Shunyam. In a very particular way. Because Sanatan has taken the Bhagavatam and even gleaned out from there, even combed it even more. Because the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva has combed throughout the entire Vedic literature and selected particular stories and characters which would illustrate Braj Bhakti, Uttam Bhakti. And then Sanatana Goswami has taken the Bhagavatam and then taken the essence, the Amrit, out of that. He's cooked that down. In other words, the Bhagavatam is like condensed milk. Condensed milk explanation of Anyabhilashita Shunyam. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is like the burfi explanation. It's like the burfi explanation of Anyabhilashita Shunyam. So, this verse is there about the Sundaram Kavitam. And also in verse 15 of this same chapter, this word Kavitam is explained. This is from first canto of Bhagavatam, fifth chapter, 18th verse. It's explaining, Bhaktivinoda says this, he introduces by saying, one should endeavor to attain pure devotional service. So this is that if one is intelligent, this verse explains if one is intelligent, and when he reads the Vedas, if he's actually intelligent, he won't be misguided or misdirected by the kavitam or flowery words, and he'll actually extract the essence of the Vedic teachings, which is bhakti. This is the whole purpose of all the Vedas, to bring people to bhakti, either immediately or gradually. Tasyeva heto prayateta kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam uparyadha talabhyate dukhavad anyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. Narada Muni's teaching. He's describing about his own travels. In other words, the Vedas are saying, most of the flowery language of the Vedas are directing you or inducing you or enticing you. Why not go to Swarga? Why not go to Janaloka or Mahaloka, Tapaloka? It's really nice. They're just advertising, travel brochures. But they're not. But now Narada Muni is saying, wait a minute, I went on that tour. I took up the tour. I went on the safari to Africa. I saw it. It's not really what it's trumped up to be. It's not all that great. Don't waste your money. Stay where you are. He says, in the course of time, I've been wandering from the seven higher planets to the seven lower planets, such as Sutala Loka. But I have not attained eternal transcendental happiness, which wise persons endeavor to taste. So he's trying to say, listen, don't fall for all the false advertising. It's a lot of propaganda. All these advertising, come to Hawaii, you'll be so happy and have a good time, it only costs $10,000. And then you get over there and you say, wait a minute, I got cheated. So Narada Muni, he's eyewitness, he's done it all. And he's telling us in Bhagavatam, save your time. Listen, don't be a fool like me. Listen to my teaching. Be intelligent. I have not attained eternal transcendental happiness, which wise persons endeavor to taste. Just as misery comes without endeavor, by the influence of grave, quickly moving time, happiness also comes without any endeavor. What, therefore, is the use of endeavoring for world happiness? So this verse, we can take this verse in different ways in relation to Nadanam Najanam Nasundaram. But it appears, as the purport is indicating, that this is Narada Muni's personal diary entry. He's done it. Look, I've done it all. I've already done it. Listen to me. Take my advice. Be intelligent. Only strive for bhakti. Give up all these other pursuits. They will not give you happiness. They will not give you pleasure. A devotee understands that any pleasure within the material universe is insignificant compared to even the slightest experience of the nectar and fragrance of Bhagavan's lotus feet. Similarly, one who has tasted molasses will give it up when he tastes fragrant sugar candy. Molasses, a lot of people have maybe had molasses. It's kind of like black gook, tar. It's kind of thick, black cooked down sugar. As it cooks, it turns black. And it's real thick, black strap molasses. But then there's something, and it's called Tal Misri, where they make a sugar candy from the juice of the tal tree. And then they cook that down, and it looks like regular Misri, rock candy, except it's yellow in color. And when you taste it, it tastes like a cross between something, it's like something flavor in America, I remember they call it toffee, whatever toffee was. It's like cross between coffee or something. Very, very tasty. They sell it by Banki Bihari Mandir, Tal Misri. You seen that yellow one? And so that's what they're saying, because it's also fragrant. If you smell it, it has a fragrance. So if you taste that, and then then someone gives you some of this molasses, that's what he's saying, that the taste of serving Krishna's lotus feet is like rock candy. It's like this mystery. And the taste of heavenly pleasures or liberation to Swarga is like black strap molasses. It's rather sticky and somewhat sweet, but not very pleasurable. You got stuck over there also. Similarly, before actually cultivating devotion to Bhagavan in association of pure devotees, the living entity who is allured by the flowery words of the Vedas desires to enjoy heavenly pleasures of Swarga. In this verse, Narada Muni is telling us that one who is actually wise, tasyeva kovido, as Prabhupada often quoted this verse, you always like this, tasyeva heto prayateta kovido. Kovido means one who is smart, intelligent, wise. They will only search for that constant, eternal, transcendental happiness that is only available in Vaikuntha. This transcendental happiness is not available to the jiva who wanders throughout the 14 worlds, searching for mundane enjoyment. So it's a matter of building up conviction. Because to give up a lesser thing, one must be fully convinced about the higher thing. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by citing these pramanic references from mostly Bhagavatam and other Goswami Granths and later Yamas or Sadhanas, Panchama Sadhana and the other later Sadhanas, he quotes more the Goswami Granths. He's trying to increase our conviction about bhakti. And because when our conviction is very strong about bhakti, then it's easy to eliminate everything else that's lingering within us. Because so many non-devotional attachments are lingering within us, and we have taste for them. We have taste for them, and we have attachment to them. And as long as we maintain taste for those non-devotional attachments, then taste for non-bhajan is denied us. It is not accessible. So with this, we have to become washed one by one of all these. So conviction, being convinced that the service of Bhagavan is the greatest attainment, is something we have to be reminded of more and more. And then addressing each one of these contaminations within us is helpful to help us eliminate them. So this verse is all about dying. The verse Nadana Najanam Nasundaram Kavinam Vajagadisha Kamiye. It's all about dying. Dying to live. So much of us has to die. In philosophy, they have a term called catharsis. Catharsis is a type of psychic death. In many cultures around the world, they undergo this type of psychic death, but they usually pursue this through the inducement of some drug, like Don Juan or all these different, by taking high doses of some drugs. They try to have some psychic transformation to transform the self or the individual. But it's all temporary. And it's all, because it's all only modal changes, manipulating the modes by increasing ignorance. Generally, by increasing ignorance, then you create a kind of a new sense of your identity. but it's simply a permutation of ignorance. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's formula is based on actual cleaning of the citta, which is where our identity is misplaced because of the contamination of the mirror of consciousness. So this Nadana Najanana Sundaram Kavitam, this is where we are at this verse. This is kind of the half of the verse. This has to be removed. Then if this this part is removed, then the second half of the verse is possible. Ahoitiki Bhakti, pure bhakti, then we will find our Ishvara, because now we have many Ishvaras, and they're not Krishna. There's many little controllers inside of us, and we'll get to that tomorrow. We'll stop here if there's any questions. Yes. Well, these, when this definition of Sundaram was given, and the sense of companionship, because devotees, what is a devotee? A devotee is considered to be our friend, because a friend is someone who reminds you of your best friend. So anyone who reminds us of Krishna, he is our friend. And so devotees are our friends because they remind us of Krishna. So that there's no difference between having the friendship of Gopal or the friendship of Gopal Das. And this Acharya explaining Sundaram in terms of companionship, it means mundane companionship. Because the real devotees are like this. And that's why in fourth canto it says, Aradhanam Sarvesham Vishnu Radhanam Param Tridinam Samarchanam. Lord Shiva is telling Parvati that of all forms of worship, worship of Vishnu is the best, but even greater than worship of Vishnu is worship of Vishnu, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. It's a worship of those related to Vishnu or things connected to Vishnu. So worship of devotees and associating with devotees is, practically speaking, greater than worshiping Krishna, because they themselves will give us Krishna. They're the embodiments. They're walking representatives of Krishna. So I don't think it means that.
Just to get the example of Brahmachari getting married, I don't think of marrying a devotee. So
yeah.
Yeah, I was asking more on that.
Okay, well, yeah, with Brahmachari, I mean, the point is that companionship, when these Brahmacharis, when I would discuss, when they say companionship, they felt that they weren't finding companionship with the Brahmacharis. Somehow the friendship or the sense of what they, when they say companionship, they generally mean a mundane sense of it. Because of emotional weakness or emotional needs, they just want someone to speak to or talk to, companionship. And actually Krishna is all that. Or even among, if devotees have devotee friends, because in other words, even if you have, if you find friendship with a group of devotees, actually you're just finding that they're increasing and enhancing your friendship with Krishna. So when you meet, if a brahmachari has brahmachari friends and sannyasi friends, when they get together, they churn the ocean of Hari Katha and the Hari Nam and chanting. And when they chant together and talk about Krishna together, they experience the presence of Krishna. They experience the embrace of Krishna, the friendship of Krishna, and they feel very happy. And no need for any other kind of companionship. So when brahmacharis are seeking companionship or marriage, it's not for that they're seeking Hari Katha from some woman. They're seeking that femininity, that softness, or that whatever they perceive that they will find there. But actually, they never find the satisfaction, because as Bhagavatam is explaining in the first canto, yenatma supersedati, that the only thing that will satisfy the self is service of the Lord and hearing Hari Katha. And that's the question that Parikshit asked Shukadev, what will really satisfy the self? No man can ever satisfy any woman, and no woman can ever satisfy any man. The only person that can satisfy every jiva is Krishna. And Krishna's devotees are simply bringing Krishna to you. So if we have devotee friends, they They bring us Krishna, and it is Krishna who satisfies us. Or Radha. Remember, they're together. So Radha and Krishna. So that's the role of devotees. That's the role of friends. So devotee friends come together and give Krishna to each other, and then they're satisfied. There's nothing more satisfying than being with a group of devotees reading and talking about Krishna. Otherwise, you know, that's what sustains us. That is the tavakatamritam tapta jivanam that puts out all the fire of material anxiety and everything else. Yes?
You always speak about it when you're a devotee, that we are just starting from one point, and there's always the two devotees who are here from the Bhagavatam, you know? But to go there, it's a long way. So, I mean, when I talk with other devotees, I'm also happy. But I'm not a few devotees, so I'm always not always engaged in devotee service. So I'm on the way to that point. So there has to be also, how do you say, a road there.
Yeah, it's a gradual process.
I'm not a few devotee, but you talk always what's happened if few devotees talk together, you know?
Yeah, well, I picked up this habit from my Guru Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada, he was always talking, although we weren't really very much on the plane of pure bhakti, but he was always talking about pure devotion and pure bhakti, and I kept thinking, well, but what about where we are? And Prabhupada didn't seem to be very much concerned about that. He said, he always pointed us towards the direction of pure devotion, and all my devotees are pure devotees, and everyone should go back to God in this life, and why take another life, and it was all very positive, and so we kind of the same way. Of course, we are in different levels, it's a fact. And the main thing is associate with those that are above us, so we go up, and make friends with those that are near us, so we stay put, and avoid those that are below us, so we don't go down. Let's put it that way. It's like we're in the ocean, and if you associate with those that are below you, they'll pull you under the water. And if you associate with those that are near you, you can have splash water on them and have some fun. And if those that are flying above the ocean, you reach out your hand and they can pull you out. So that's kind of the way the association is described.
Because most of the end of the class, I always realize I'm not devoted.
That's good. I realize at the beginning of class. You realize at the end, but at least we both end up at the same point. And so you came a second time, so it must be. If you keep coming to class, and if I keep speaking and you keep listening, probably by the end of the course we'll both become devotees. That's the whole idea. We're trying to help each other. See, Dusty, you realize at the end of the class, I realize at the beginning. The realization is the same. Yours is 1 hour later. But 1 hour in eternal time doesn't mean anything. So maybe after 30 days, there's some. We're all here on a hope. Only sadhana is all based on hope, ashabandha. Because sadhana is not cause and effect. Sadhana bhakti doesn't create bhava. It's just simply positioning ourselves for mercy. So you and I are trying to get in the right position to receive the mercy. And there are a lot of assurances that the mercy really comes in Kartik, in Vrindavan, especially at Radhakund. So and we also read in scriptures that only devotees can come to Vrindavan during Kartik. So I see you're in Vrindavan during Kartik, so I can also assume, with Shastric support, I can also conclude that you're also a devotee. So don't feel so bad. You're definitely a devotee. I don't mean to put you in a bad frame of mind with the class. That wasn't my intention. But sometimes the acharyas, they turn us upside down to get loose anything that may be hanging in there. Just like Sanatan Goswami was traveling with Ishan. And they were going through the mountains, and there were some dacoits there, and Ishan was carrying some gold coins. Ishan, I think it was Ishan, and they almost lost their lives because of it. And then each one said, well, I have 7 gold coins. And then Sanatan told the dacoits, well, we have 7 gold coins. You can take them. Just get us through this mountain pass safely. Then the dacoit said, listen, my astrologer told me you had these gold coins. I was going to kill you anyway. But since you gave them freely and you're a nice saintly person, I won't kill you. I'll take your gold and show you a cross. So then he got a cross, and then Sanatan Goswami could understand that there was another gold coin. He said, wait a minute, are you holding something? I think you have one more coin. And Ishan said, yes, I do. And then Sanatan says, you keep it and get out of here. So sometimes we have to get shaken up and everything has to come out in order for us to go forward. So stepping back sometimes is helpful for jumping. You ever see a monkey before he jumps? Monkey's standing like this. Before he jumps across a building, he bends down. He gets like this and boing! Like when Hanuman jumped to Lanka. He was very tall because they said, they reminded him, you have so much powers, you can jump to Lanka, you can come back. So then he said, yeah, I have so many powers, I'm so big. And Hanuman became like as big as this, you know, Empire State Building. Very huge. And they said, oh, yeah, you can do it. But then did he jump at that size? No, then he came down. He compressed himself and he squatted down and boom. So being reduced to nothing is very good in order to become something. So if these classes reduce us to nothing, then we can really expect that we'll become something. Thakur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.